May we meditate on that beautiful light which is the source of this entire universe, the light that shines in the sun, the light that shines in our own intelligence. May that light guide our understanding. Let us sit quietly for a few minutes in meditation. The topic this morning is fulfillment of desire. What is desire? A central teaching in all spiritual traditions tells us our sense desires are the obstacle to realizing spiritual truth, to experiencing God, at least experiencing the presence of God in our life. Do we understand what desire is? Is it really a villain? Why do we associate desire with the senses? That's a bad word, sense desire. What's wrong with the senses? Are they really wrong? Or can it be that we are using them in the wrong way? Desire is a central part of our life. We will agree that desire is the primary energy that activates our life. Facing the question of what is desire is a major part of spiritual practice. Sometimes desire is equated with the idea of hope. We keep hoping, we keep longing to believe that what we are wanting to acquire or wanting to achieve will bring fulfillment to us. Why else would we make the effort? We link desire with fulfilling wants within ourselves. It comes down to who are we? Because we are the ones wanting, we are the ones hoping, we are the ones acquiring and achieving. If we want to understand desire, we need to find out how it functions in our life. It is not an academic question. It is a hands-on question of how we make use of desire. Here is one definition of desire given by a senior Swami. Our true spiritual self exists behind both subject and object, both inside and outside. We sense in the outside, whether in people or things, the presence of our spiritual self. So we run after the outside, trying to regain our own true, undivided being. The implications of this definition are far-reaching. If we are not aware of our spiritual self, we feel we are rather small and incomplete. We feel there are a lot of things outside ourselves that we need in order to feel complete. So we have outer channels for seeking and acquiring what we are wanting. These are the five senses of perception affixed to our body and mind. They are our five specialized agents through which we select and obtain what we feel we want outside ourselves. In our so-called normal existence, the longing in our hearts is not unified. Because we have delegated to our senses the responsibility of being our wish fulfillers. Therefore, our longing is scattered in the form of many sense desires. The clue here is that we have actually split our desire into two things. We desire what we like. We don't desire what we don't like. We avoid what we don't like. There is a problem when our undisciplined senses are hooked up with our one-sided desire. Spiritual practice requires us to discipline our senses. Our life will remain largely scattered and ineffective until we do so. Our life becomes like a jigsaw puzzle of some positive mental and emotional pieces and also some negative mental and emotional pieces, like restlessness, frustration, fears, regrets, resentments, all kinds of spurious, enthusiastic elation followed by low spirits, by despondency. We don't feel an inner wholeness, an inner fulfillment. We have been using our senses in a hungering and avoiding way, and it hasn't worked out for us at all. How to discipline the senses? It comes to our motive of action. In a very basic way, our motives of action need to be cleansed of being selfishly choosy. We are the ones using our senses. We are the conscious ones. We are lights of awareness. The senses aren't conscious without our infusing them with consciousness. We wouldn't strike up a conversation with our eyes or our ears. The senses are our tools. What is our motive? What is our purpose behind our dealings in life? Swami Vivekananda says in his talk, Work and Its Secret, we come into life to accumulate. With clenched hands, we want to take. But nature puts a hand on our throat and makes our hands open. Whether we will it or not, we have to give. We are machines for taking and giving. We take in order to give. Ask therefore nothing in return, but the more we give, the more will come to us. It is a law of life. We will be supplied with whatever we need to become more effective givers of ourselves. The realized souls will tell us it is undisciplined sense desire that divides us from others. And it is our undisciplined sense desire that divides us within ourselves. We are not wholehearted givers because we want to swallow up in ourselves only what we like. Yes, we should gather from this world all that we need to live our life responsibly. The question is, what is living life responsibly? What is our inner motive? We do learn sooner or later that life is for wholehearted giving. That is the way we will find fulfillment, not by struggling for our separate advantages, separate comforts, separate conveniences. We are divided in ourselves when we make ourselves self-centered consumers for the things we want, while running away from what we don't want, all the while believing both sides are outside of ourselves. If we want to feel more whole within, we have to undo many old habits of thought and behavior. We have been caught in the mental habit of assuming the outside world is a sort of commodity, simply waiting for us to selectively take from it. The world is there to give us what we want. And we find more often than not disappointment and more disappointment. We are forced to examine our wants. What do we want? What is our usual way of wanting? We can tangibly feel the world as a part of our own self-existence, rather than feeling it is extending separately outside of us. Is the universe separate from us? Are others separate from us? Are we a tiny person separate from the huge outside universe? What would it mean to feel the world is actually a part of our own self-existence, is included in our own self-existence? Vedanta seers of ancient times realized this universe is a layered existence. There is an ocean of matter visible to our surface perception. There is an ocean within matter, and also enveloping matter is an ocean of life. Within life and also enveloping life is an ocean of mind. Within mind and also enveloping mind is an ocean of intelligence. Within intelligence and also enveloping intelligence is an ocean of bliss. Within bliss is the infinite divine being enveloping all. Our individual selfhood is made up of these same layers. The three outer layers of living body and mind are always changing, passing. That is the nature of these layers. When we live in our outer mind layer, we do run after what we like and avoid what we don't like. This is the natural energy on this level that fans the constant rising and falling of mental waves. Our intelligence is the fourth layer inward of ourselves. This infinite divine being exists in the blissful heart of our intelligence, our deeper mind. Our intelligence is reflecting divine light. It is reflecting the light of God in our hearts. It is such fine matter that it is almost transparent. It is likened to a mirror. It can reveal to us the silent, calm, clear being of God. Instead, we have harnessed intelligence to the outgoing mind. The roots of our senses are situated in this outer mind. So we run along with this mind and don't notice our mind's inner substance, our mind's finer substance. We have forgotten that the source of our individual light of self is the universal light of God. Intelligence does not run anywhere. It is the still reflector of ultimate unity, of ultimate reality. There is nothing other than or beyond ultimate unity. And that is our true self. That is the existence of God in the core of our being. It is through this unity that we learn the secret of finding fulfillment in this world. We have become unaffected, uncontrolled. We have to become unaffected, uncontrolled by our likes and dislikes. Then we will feel unity in the constant moving, changing outer layers of our being. Unity does not exist and never will exist in these layers. Unity exists in the heart of us. This unity fills the whole of existence and can be awakened within us through spiritual thought, understanding, and action. As the last words of Holy Mother so beautifully state, learn to make the world your own. No one is a stranger. My child, the world is yours. We need to touch this unity, the light of God in our hearts. This is the way to fulfill our desires in life. It is a long process. Here is another definition of desire. Sense desires are the false representation of the true desire for God, the desire for our own spiritual self. When we discover this fact, our desires all become unified. All our emotions, all forces of mind, blend themselves into one longing for our true, undivided self, into one longing for God. The infinite being of God is in all hearts, is everywhere throughout the universe. We can transform our motives of action. We can unify all our motives of action in life through the longing to see God in all our activities and in everyone surrounding us. We stop trying to change everything and everyone according to our self-seeking specifications. A deeper way of seeing gradually opens within us. Instead of seeing ourselves and this world only with the eyes of our body and mind, we begin to see with the eye of the soul, the eye of our heart. We will then instinctively want to give, to offer ourselves to the God who is appearing before us as this world. Our life is transformed inwardly. It doesn't happen overnight to most of us. It is a process. As Swami Vivekananda says, in many places, our work is slowly transformed into worship. Our true nature is not physical or mental, it is spiritual. Vedanta thought explains that the body and mind are our outer and inner tools, and we have to learn how to use them to lead a spiritually oriented life. Ordinary life is an unexamined life. We have become stuck to our tools of body and mind, and so we can't handle them. We cannot handle them properly. Let's say we are carpenters and open up our toolbox to begin our next project. We take out a hammer and straighten some nails. We go to put the hammer back in our box, but we can't let it go. It is welded to our hand. Vedanta teachers are telling us we are not these material tools. We are the light of intelligence. We are lights of awareness, lights of attention. We are the intelligent wielder of tools. So why should the tools be wielding us? Sri Ramakrishna calls us unripe egos when we stick unto the tools of our bodies and minds. The unripe ego says, I am the body and mind. Me and my body and mind are the doers. I, my body and mind, am the agent and owner of my thoughts and actions. Everything in my life belongs to me. I possess my relations with others. I own the place where I live. I own the fruits of my actions. I am gathering everything up for my happiness. What does the ripe ego say? O Lord, you alone do everything. You alone are my own. And to you belongs houses, family, friends, and the whole world. All this is yours. We have invested our attention in the constant movement, in the constant rises and falls of our outgoing mind. This outer mind is fanned into constant waves through sense desire. We have, as it were, cemented ourselves to the surface of life and are unable to recognize that the essence of those surface waves is the same clear, calm water of intelligence that holds them aloft. It is water alone that forms the waves. The real nature of our eye is that divine light reflected in the luminous still water of our intelligence. We are bundles of inner stillness and outer activity. Many of us can remember Christ's words to the Samaritan woman at the well. If you ask me for water, I will not give you just this well water. I will give you the water of life, the water of everlasting life. Realized souls also call this water of everlasting life an infinite ocean of light. Ordinarily, we feel our sense of life, self, is located in a physical body and mind. We are narrowed down, as it were, to a point of light. As we become free of identifying with body and mind, that point of light expands into its source, a universal ocean of light, boundless, infinite. Often the teachers ask us to meditate on this point of light in our hearts, and that becomes our door of contact with or absorption in the light of God. We will grow into our true individuality because we have arrived at the universal source of all individuality. Until we find this universal foundation of ourselves, we live in a separate individuality built up by our own past actions, thoughts, and feelings. The problem is they are one-sided actions and thoughts and feelings. They have left impressions on our mind and formed tendencies that impel our daily lives here. It is an endless cycle that leads us through life after life, following the outreach of our desiring senses. One Swami compared our ongoing cycles of life to a soap opera. There are a few basic themes to all our stories, and we keep repeating them again and again with varied costumes and backdrops. What is this outreaching desire? It is the ongoing desire to possess what we like externally. This is one definition of sense desire. It is not a definition of desire in itself. Our spiritual struggle is liberating desire from flowing in the wrong direction. The physical world is made up of the pairs of opposites. What is happiness one moment is often unhappiness the next. The world is made up of kindness and cruelty, of beauty and ugliness, of light and darkness, etc., etc., etc. This is the one unchanging thing in our otherwise changing world. We can never only have one side of these opposites because they come in pairs. In ordinary human understanding, we think life should be freedom for our senses to go where we want, do what we want, have what we want, have all the objects we want to enjoy through the senses. This is called enjoyment of life, fulfillment of life. And actually, we can have all these things in the true sense of having. Sooner or later, we understand that everything belongs to us not by possessing anything. We understand, as Mother says, this world belongs to God. We come into this world naked, and we leave this world naked. Whatever has come our way in life is God's gift to us. We are God's custodians. Spiritual practice trains our minds inward to the deeper reality of ourselves and simultaneously the deeper reality of the world. We become gradually masters of the mind and senses. We transcend their constant pulls that we have initiated to possessively cling to the things we want outwardly. Our senses don't have to be run on selfishness. We begin to perceive the world of so-called matter in a subtler light, a living light. We begin to feel the unifying presence of our deeper intelligence, to feel a growing sense of wholeness within, and calmness comes into our senses and outreaching mind. We begin to touch this outer world with inner understanding. The eye of our soul is opening. Our sense of I is regaining its true spiritual nature. If we are still caught in our unripe ego self, this world is the sphere of our ego karma, of doing with self-interest, accomplishing outwardly as if for a coveted trophy, of selecting experiences, of possessing and storing them for our use, a world to continue playing the outreach of this karma. We can't ignore this force of karma. We can't shut out the outside world. We can learn to perceive the world in a truer way. We can learn to deal with karma in a fulfilling way. We don't have to grab at the world. We can handle the world with reverence. And we can accept that the world is geared to give us both sides of the coin. Rushing out through senses is only a habit. The senses don't have to be instruments to pursue self-sense desire. If we've had the blessing of being in the presence of a fully realized soul, there is nothing on earth to compare to it. Every word, every gesture, glance of an eye is saturated with wholeness. There is no more division in that person. There is no inside or outside in our ordinary sense. The souls move freely amidst these realized souls move freely amidst the world's sense objects, neither seeking or avoiding them, simply making use of them when they're needed. How can we understand what the experience would be of realizing there is nothing outside oneself or nothing outside God? These great ones are the real measure of life's meaning because they show us the real possibility of ourselves. The culmination of that possibility is a very high realization, but we can begin to appreciate its truth from our day-to-day struggles now. We can transform our tendencies that have placed us where we are now in life, transform them from material to spiritual. Perhaps not even consciously, we are cultivating a wise contentment in life. What I have now, where I am living now, is enough for me to work with. I can focus today on the present elements of my life, my possessions, my relationships, my daily routines, to keep clearing them of selfishness. The more we work at it, the more inner strength we gain. This is living life according to Dharma. We meet the demands of our life with the highest sense of duty. It becomes our Swadharma, our individual way of life. Our present tendencies of thought and action have been formed from our past habits. We work out those tendencies according to moral, disciplined, dharmic ways, and we actually transcend those tendencies. Our lives begin to turn inward to make an about-face from our divided self and its passing fragments of experience. Ordinarily, we try to hold on to each momentary piece of sense contact, the contact we've especially chosen for our personal satisfaction. But it simply passes away along with all the other contacts good or bad, happy or unhappy, the senses bring us both, and we are the choosers. If we don't try to hold on to each passing moment of our choice, we can participate in the flow of life with inner freedom. Putting it bluntly, every moment we live in sense life, we die in that moment in sense life. Our yesterday can never be contacted again through the senses. It's a memory. But our deeper mind, our intelligence, is reflecting the light of God in our hearts. That reflected unmoving ocean of divine life is what gives continuity, actually gives the substance to the passing moments of our life. We are not losing anything by accepting this flow. We move along with it, anchored in the stillness of our deeper unmoving self. We usually feel we are fulfilled by attaching to people, places, our work interests, of attaching to what we love and becoming absorbed there. We don't stop to consider how we are using the energy of attachment. We need to learn how to mature attachment. Maturity of attachment brings us true absorption in what we love. To have the capacity to absorb ourselves in anything, we have to have the power of attachment from our identity with body and mind, which are the emblems of our separateness from everything and everyone. There must be total absorption in our little personality, in our object of endeavor. A musician, an artist, must forget his little self in order to absorb in the tiniest detail of his art. The same is true of any excellence of achievement in any field, and the same is true of our human relations. The same is true of any sense of fulfillment we feel in anything, or are doing it. The same is true of any sense of fulfillment we feel in anything we are doing, or anything we are perceiving. True knowing of anything is to become one with it. If it's outside of us, we only see the outside, not the living heart. Knowing means overcoming external barriers. The senses are our active channels to contact the sense world. We are using our senses as personal desire chasers. We will never be able to truly absorb ourselves in anything or anyone if this is what we do. That possessiveness instantly builds a wall between ourselves and the object of our desire that says, I want this for me. With that attitude, how can we expect to have the capacity to forget our separateness and enter into the heart of anyone or anything? Spiritual practice gives us the tool of detachment. Detachment is freeing ourselves from dependence on selectively going after the external surface of ourselves and the world we live in. There is an inner dimension of the senses. It is not that we necessarily give up external possessions. We can live spiritually in any situation if we give up this attitude of personal possessiveness. One way the teachers explain detachment is to say it is simply higher attachment. We first attach to the passing surface of ourselves and the surface of all around us. Then we gradually detach from that surface. We grow toward attaching to the heart of all around us through the heart of ourselves. Our heart is expanding. We slowly attach to God, our true self. We slowly attach to the abiding reality within the sense forms. What is the power of love the power of attachment, love is actually rooted in detachment. We can truly be absorbed in what we love when we have detached ourselves from the external barriers of our outer personality, our bodies and minds. Our bodies and minds don't disappear while we are living in this physical world. They disappear in samadhi. In our lives, body and mind become the integral tools of our deeper self. We gradually become the experiencers of a God-saturated world because our deeper self is filled with God. We have mistakenly separated this one power within us into apparently two opposite tendencies. We are attached to our friends, our relatives, we are attached to our works. We are attached to external objects, and we get pleasure from them. But we learn that our detachment, when it is separated from detachment, also brings us misery. Like the bee, come to sip honey from the honey pot, but its feet get stuck, and it can't fly away. That is because our attachment is not developed into its whole nature. It is only half-baked. It comes from an unripe ego, not a ripe one. All the pairs of opposites intrinsic in this physical mental world belong to God, to Divine Mother. She tells us, "My child, I can't only give you pleasant things. How will you grow strong? I will nourish both your likes and dislikes so that you grow into your spiritual nature, transcending them both." We can truly have our friends, relatives, our works, etc., when we have become detached from the one-sided use of our bodies and minds. Detachment comes through realizing the inner reality of our bodies and minds. Detachment comes through transcending, using them selfishly. Swami Vivekananda says in Work and Its Secret, "Ordinarily, we are all beggars. Whatever we do, we want a return. We are traders. We have come to trade. It is a question of give and take, of buy and sell. If we come to trade, we have to abide by the laws of buying and selling. There is a rise and fall in prices. So, there are always bad times and good times. We get caught not by what we give, but by what we expect. We get misery in return from our love, not from the fact that we love, but from the fact that we want a return for our love. Our one-sided desire, our one-sided attachment must sooner or later bring misery." Mother taught, work gives us practice in offering our efforts to God. Work gives us practice in not expecting anything from the world for what we do. If we expect anything from the world, from brooding from the world, then the world controls us. Self-forgetting surface keeps the mind away from brooding over small personal dissatisfactions. Work fends off idle thoughts and selfish thoughts. The more intently we think of the well-being of others, the more oblivious we are of our little ego. In addition to offering our actions to God, there is the powerful tool of repeating the name of God throughout our days, the tool of japa. There is a beautiful poem of Sri Chaitanya that our Hollywood Center repeats every day in their temple. Its opening line could be a mantra for us. "Chant unceasingly the name of the Lord and his glory, that the mirror of the heart may be wiped clean." The mirror of the heart is our intelligence. We persistently smooth away the waves of selfish motive and expectation that have become like a film of dust over this mirror. The name of God is our royal cleaning cloth. More and more light shines in our lives. This is the universal light that is the source of all our individual self-lights. Our individual light of self becomes filled to capacity with its universal source. We attain to our true universal individuality. We learn absorption in that inner reality of our lives while engaging in daily duties and responsibilities. It's an art to attach ourselves to our specific duties wholeheartedly and at the same time be detached. We find we are learning to work in the inner field of mind. We are bringing forth our intelligence. We are working for our inner evolution. It is not about what we are getting out of work. It is about how we are growing within through the opportunity of work. It is about truly feeling happy to have the chance to give of ourselves. It is an art to attach ourselves to our specific duties wholeheartedly and at the same time be detached. Without personal possessiveness, without a selfish motive, our work is free. We can then have the power of truly giving to others, seeing the needs of others, caring for others. We can handle anything, take responsible care of anything, if we persist in professing that nothing truly belongs to us. Our once grasping senses are transformed into senses of reverence and worship. The same outer details of our working lives are going on, but our experience has been transformed. We learn to touch this world with inner understanding. So, the fulfillment of our desires, when we give to sense desires the right direction toward touching the ocean of God in our hearts, they join together and become a sweet, wholesome, powerful river flowing into our divine ocean of self. We don't need to turn away from the world. We do need to not perceive the world, to not use our senses for grabbing at the world with selfish expectations. One Swami put it like this: if we don't look at this world with covetous eyes, everything reveals to us the message of the infinite. We do belong to God. God is our true reality, and God has always been the reality of all we've been seeking for life after life. God is in our own hearts and everywhere. We are bundles of inner stillness and outer activity. As Swami Vivekananda says in his talks on practical Vedanta, real activity is combined with eternal calmness which cannot be ruffled. Real activity is combined with balance of mind, never disturbed by whatever happens. We can live our lives in such inner freedom, free from depending on anything external to fulfill our wants, because the world will also give us what we don't want. We learn to live in and through that inner unity of soul, inner unity of God. So in conclusion, the 17th verse of chapter 2 in the Bhagavad Gita describes beautifully what our state of being will then be like. Swami Vivekananda paraphrases this verse in his classes on the Gita that he gave in San Francisco in 1900. As all the rivers of the world constantly flow their waters into the ocean, but the ocean's grand, majestic nature remains undisturbed and unchanged. So even though all the senses bring in sensations from nature, good or bad, the ocean-like heart of the sage knows no disturbance, knows no fear. Let miseries come in millions of rivers, and happiness in only hundreds. I am no slave to misery. I am no slave to happiness. And so, this is the state of one who has realized the true fulfillment of desire. O Divine Mother Sarada, please remove the dullness from our hearts and endow us with keen and tranquil understanding.